Pediatrics, whose members deliver the majority of vaccines that children receive in the U.S. So it's a very exciting perspective to be able to bring to this conference. Dr. Taylor's been active in immunization issues, including vaccine financing and administration fees, and has served as a community pediatrician in rural eastern North Carolina since 1977. So that's really on the front lines. And we're very excited to welcome him here this morning to be part of the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be here with all of you. My career has been all about vaccines. The reason I'm here is because in 1985, my father was found liable in a DTP vaccine-related injury case based on a shot given by his partner's nurse in their office in 1974. And North Carolina put in a vaccine-related injury compensation program in 1986 before the federal program. And because of my involvement with all that, you see me today, because my colleagues, once we had figured out state government, would never let me stop doing state government. And one thing led to another. But I found it quite rewarding to work with Beth Rowe West, our immunization director, who's here from North Carolina, and all the wonderful people in state government. And I've even got to know a few federal people now that I'm doing some of this work at the academy level. How do you advance this? I've already punched all those. At any rate, I think the schedule that we have is just fine. In my opinion, it's innocent until proven guilty. Our practice is one of those Medicaid SCHIP practices where two-thirds of our cash flow is Medicaid and SCHIP. And the vast majority of children who walk through our doors need one or more immunizations, regardless of the reason they're there for the visit. So very supportive of the schedule as we have it. And I'll eventually get back to the first of these slides, but I don't think so. Okay. Oh, you were there. That's good. Back one more. And now how do I advance it?
This is forward.
Okay.
This is where you want to be?
Six is forward and four is backwards. Okay. I got you.
So six.
Okay, I'm good. That's fine. But vaccines really are about the largest carrot we have to get people to come into our offices for a variety of services, including the preventive health services of Bright Futures. Vaccines are a source of quality measurement and improvement for us. They're huge in public relations because of the preventive value of vaccines, and it is a financial struggle for most pediatricians to stay in the business. Just in the last 10 years, the number of expensive vaccines added to the schedule has put maybe $100,000 or more in the refrigerator or freezer at any one time, putting us at great liability to go down the tubes because of our investment in vaccines. So a very tricky but important issue for our practices. The process that goes on in every office every day when we're giving vaccines, and we don't need to complicate this process anymore, is we check the patient in. Our office is totally electronic, and we do have flags to tell us if children need vaccines. We have to go out of that software into another software to enter vaccine data into the North Carolina Immunization Registry. Again, that's a two-way street. The registry can help us notify parents of vaccine needs, and we, of course, can be sure we put good data into the registry, but I love the registry, although it's been a pain to implement. The nurse encounter has a chance to check, but we have to stay on the nurses to say check, check every time. My partner incentivizes my nurses to do dental varnishes, and he needs to get some incentivization programs for immunizations, because I think immunizations are at least as important as putting that stuff on the teeth. The provider encounter, some of us pediatricians are good at our OCD when the immunization issue clicks in with our brains, and some of us are pretty oblivious to it, but we need to do better. all offices should have walk-in immunizations, but if you call most offices and you want an immunization, they give you an appointment, whereas we have set up a system for walk-in immunizations. And then our staff recall efforts are non-existent unless the physician or the nurse practitioner or physician assistant drives that system. Our practice, to give you some feel, runs 4 offices. There are 22 providers, including 14 docs and 8 mid-levels. We have over 100,000 patient visits a year, and I honestly never have seen a child who was permanently injured by a childhood vaccine. So again, when you ask me about the schedule, should we change it, I'd say absolutely not. The registry has been a plus because we get all the data from all over North Carolina. It's not integrated with other states, of course. We have had to hire 2 full-time employees to implement the registry in our practice, and we've had to redesign our systems so that vaccines are given by nursing staff and not by doctors anymore. The other places where our nurses will enter this information would be the paper chart, because we still feel, because of liability issues, that we ought to have parents sign for vaccines, and we still prepare what we call the bubble sheets, where they circle in the vaccines given and send a check sheet to the health department, and then we have a billing record. So actually in our office there are 5 places to go check and see if somebody got an immunization, which is probably a tremendous overkill, and maybe we'll figure out how to get away from that. But my nurses, who I met with before coming to this meeting, assured me that there are times when the immunization that the parent is sure the child got only shows up in 1 place of those 5. So you tell me what the answer is. I wouldn't dare touch the system my nurses have developed either. Better sense than that. When you look at barriers, again, the schedule doesn't need to be changed because we got enough meat on the bone right now. We have vaccines for children vaccine. We have private stocks. We have 2 refrigerators and 2 freezers. Beth Rowe Weston, the immunization branch in North Carolina, have been wonderful to do all the paperwork so that we don't have to keep separate refrigerator freezer for universal vaccine in North Carolina, which is another little issue that some of you confront every day. We've got parent awareness. A lot of parents think that after the child gets the first 6 months of shots that there just aren't any more. And then staff commitment, staff time, provider commitment, provider time, and then this huge issue of parent resistance because of all the media hype about autism and vaccines, which is just a crying shame. It's our fault because we've done such a good job, but now we're having to figure out how to work around this, thanks to Paul Offit and other wonderful leaders. The other barriers are the cost of the product that I've already alluded to. The payment for product-related expenses. Found out recently that TRICARE and some of the private insurance companies get their vaccine prices from Medicare. Medicare rarely gives a vaccine other than pneumococcal and influenza and maybe Zostavax to the elderly. There's no reason Medicare should be setting our vaccine prices. That needs to be fixed, and we're working on that. But it was a frightening thing that they were just looking in this old Thompson Red Book and putting their finger on a figure and writing it down, and they would always take the lowest of the figures in the Thompson Red Book, and that's what our pediatricians were putting up with when the insurance company says this is what we're going to pay you. But we have a lot of physicians who are losing money in the vaccine business. The cost of administration, this has been carefully worked out. We know what it costs in 1993. The Vaccines for Children program published administration fees that were appropriate for states. 3 states out of 50 states were anywhere close to those levels in 2007 when we met with the federal officials and said, why can't we get these rates up from the 1993 levels to at least what Medicare, which finally established administration fees, says we should be paid? And they said, well, none of the states are even paying what we told you to pay in 1993, so why should we put it up? So again, we're part of our own problem here, but we have a lot of physicians who don't participate in vaccines for children because the administration fees are below what it costs to give vaccines in their practices. We have private sector administration fees. The private sector insurance companies will feed right off the VFC program and the Medicaid program, and, you know, we're right back where we started. And then combination vaccines, that's an even larger morass. In North Carolina, we have Glaxo, and the governor decreed several years ago that we would use Pediarix. And we met with Medicaid and said, now, if we're going to use Pediarix, that's three administration fees, and you're just going to give us one. You need to put this into the formula, because we need to be paid for all this work we do to tell parents about three vaccines, even though they're just getting one shot. Nothing has happened. We've met again with Medicaid to tell them, look, we've done this on good faith, but we're pulling out. And we met with them in December, have not heard one word back from them since. And so my managing partner from Long Island, New York, he's not stupid. You know, I expect that right now we have ceased to stock combination vaccines because of the failure of Medicaid and the private payers to do what they're supposed to do. But this is terrible, because these kids ought to be able to get the vaccine that's going to be, you know, the most user-friendly and comfortable for the child and the family. And we're just stuck in a vaccine financing morass on that one. And then we've got underinsured children who, if they come in the office, by the law, I'm not supposed to vaccinate them with VFC vaccine. I'm supposed to send them to a federally qualified health center. They're not as easy to access in a lot of places as you would think. And it's against the law for the health department to immunize those kids with VFC vaccine. If they got insurance, it just doesn't pay enough to cover physician costs. Again, our immunization branch has worked with us to let us immunize those children when we honestly know they're not going to get immunized if they leave our offices, so they let us use state vaccine. But the whole system needs to be addressed. We've got more problems than the schedule. This is just an overview to let you know how involved the Academy is with immunizations. These three departments, practice, community, and chapter affairs, we have 66 chapters out there in states and Canadian provinces and Puerto Rico that are working with your immunization branches in your states on a regular basis. And then our federal affairs department in Washington has 16 employees, including four attorneys, who are working very hard with the federal government to assure that we have as much support at the federal level as possible for our immunization program. The Academy really is committed to immunizations. The community and specialty pediatrics house our section on infectious diseases, which does education of pediatricians, and then our committee on infectious diseases writes what you guys would know as the Red Book, or our little Bible for infectious diseases and immunizations at the Academy and throughout the world. Really, it's the most popular pediatric publication. When you go internationally and talk to pediatricians, they all want a Red Book in their particular language. Our board of directors and executive committee oversee all of this. We're constantly talking about immunizations on our conference calls. And then our communication and media has organized the Immunization Alliance, which are the pro-vaccine groups. Many of you in this room are part of our Immunization Alliance to combat the poisonous material coming out of the media to suggest that vaccines are more harmful than they are good. And we appreciate very much your participation in this Immunization Alliance, and the Academy is committed to keeping it going. Our other resources would be our Committee on Practice and Ambulatory Medicine has a subcommittee on immunizations that used to house our task force. And then our Private Payer Advocacy Advisory Committee has put out many statements, one of which is a business case for pricing vaccines, which actually gives our pediatricians some idea of what they should be negotiating for in terms of prices from payers for vaccines. And we have other web-related resources that I won't read out to you. And then we work very closely, as I've said, with a lot of you folks at the federal level. But all in all, I think the cup is always half full. Immunizations are the single most important public health intervention in the history of man, and we all have to be committed to making sure the children get their immunizations. And again, because of the public health approach that we have to take with immunizations, when the child shows up in the office, we must be able to give that child every immunization they're eligible for at that particular visit. And we would just express the Academy's strong opposition to any change in the schedule. And appreciate your time and attention this morning.